This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Everybody, and welcome to the first ever, hopefully not the last, crossover episode of Affirmative Murder and Fruit Loops. Alvin, would you care to introduce yourself?
Yes, that's right, folks. Your dreams have come true. the sun has shined upon you, and two of your faves have joined forces. It's like when Beyonce and Nicki Minaj did that song that one time. This is the affirmative murder Fruit Loops crossover mega mashup of once
explosion.
In a decade spectacular.
That's right, and you are listening to Alvin Williams of Affirmative Murder.
Hello.
And Wendy and Beth Williams, no relation,
right.
Of Fruit Loops. So we are talking about today the Netflix docuseries called The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez, which is clearly a play on words in my opinion, because it's all about the trials and crimes that led to the death of this little boy, but also the trials that tribulations that this little boy had to go through in his life. And Gabriel Fernandez, was an 8-year-old boy from Palmdale, come back to me, Afro Man style.
Afro Man style?
Yeah. Sorry,
oh, wow.
I can't help myself.
I didn't
every
know he had
time.
A style. Wow.
every time.
You're like deep into his discography to know he has several styles.
I'm telling you, you just Google it.
I've never had to be convinced about it. I've never met somebody that had the energy to convince me about Afro Man. So like, listen,
I'm telling you, you only know that
if you listen to the B-sides,
you just don't know.
You only know the popular stuff. You got to really go deep on Afro Man.
Yeah. La da 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 la da 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 because I got high. Ooh. Come on, Beth. Have you heard that song?
Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah,
I was going to clean
heard
my
Palmdale.
Room.
Everyone's heard it because I got high. I thought he made that song and then just like poofed like a genie. I didn't know there was other.
No, there's. Bands. Oh, man. And there's another one about all the broads that he's been with across the world. And
sounds very romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. I haven't seen him in concert.
He's amazing.
But there's still time. So anyway, Gabriel Fernandez died on May 24th, 2013, after suffering months of systematic torture and abuse at the hands of his mother and her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. On the night of May 24th, the mother's boyfriend beat the little boy to death. Eventually, his mother and boyfriend were arrested and convicted for his death, which is a silver lining, I suppose. Before we get into it, how is everybody doing? How's everybody feeling today?
Ooh, I've been walking around the house with my hood up and tied around my face, listening to Bon Iver for like the whole day.
Oh no!
This put me in a dark place, man. I needed to watch Frozen and just eat some gelato and really just woosah. I needed at least 12 woosahs. After
uh-huh.
this documentary.
Uh-huh. It was I feel
a heavy
you.
Watch. Heavy
yes,
watch.
It was yeah. a heavy watch indeed.
Same here. I was a real bummer.
Yeah. It was. It wasn't. I don't know how many times you guys watched it in preparation for our mashup episode, but I watched it twice.
Yeah, I watched it twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kudos to both of you. I don't have that Williams blood in me. That was, this side of the Williams is like, I'm going to watch this once and I'm never going to watch this again.
Never watch it again.
Never again.
If Netflix suggested again, I'm going to say no.
Like, no, I'm not. Netflix, how about no?
Fuck you, Netflix.
Continue watching? That's what it kept asking me.
Are you sure?
Resume?
Yeah. I'm very concerned. Like, are you sure you want to keep going? Got you, Wendy and Beth. We made a commitment. I have to.
We did. It's for the listeners. It's for the fans. It's for you guys. But I am doing good. Technical difficulties aside, I got through it. I've hugged my kids much tighter since watching this.
I would never do this to you. They're like, what? What? Don't worry.
Yeah, no, like,
not yet.
Mom, I can't breathe. Oh, I just love you so much. So, now that we have checked in, everybody's breathing and ready to go, let's get right into it. So, what did you think of this series? React.
Okay. I thought it covered way more topics than I thought it would. I really, when I heard about the story, I remember the story for what it was. I didn't think, I was like, six episodes must have been really traumatic of a story. And it was, mm-hmm. but they covered so much besides what happened to Gabriel Fernandez. I was really surprised by how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Yeah. Morpheus. Yeah.
It was a Morpheus quote.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, guys. Hey, guys. Yeah, no big deal, guys. It's cool.
Fishburne is the greatest actor of all time. Fight me if you want.
Wow, you got some really interesting takes. Okay. Afro Man, Stan. Larry Fishburne is the greatest actor ever.
Yes.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah. Let's move on.
Go deeper.
No. I
don't know if I could say I enjoyed the documentary, but yes. It was really well done. Mm-hmm. It was a good documentary. It was informative. It was a bummer.
Eye opening.
But
a lot of words that there's no positive words I can use to describe it, but it is good that I watched.
How about interesting? That's kind of positive.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
That's a good word.
That's a good word. It was thought-provoking.
I would say it's a must watch. I mean,
yeah, you need to learn about what's happening.
You do need to learn about what's happening, and you know, when we know better, we do better. And there was so many aspects of the story that I just had no idea about, and we'll get into it when we get further into the episode. But this one event, the loss of this one child, really opened up issues.
A whole can of worms.
Whole can of worms. The police, the social workers, the parents, the school, the prosecutors. There's just so many angles, and the journalists who did a great job covering the case and uncovering, you know, digging under rocks and finding all these facts out. Like, it was just a really, really well told story. And I think it is a must watch.
And a very complex story.
Yeah, for sure.
This felt like as if this whole thing was, you know, when your mom tells you to clean your room and you just put everything up in
under
the closet.
The bed.
It just was scratching. It was scratching to get out. And then Gabriel Fernandez, he was that last thing you tried to throw in there, and the door flew open, and then there's this whole mess. There was what?
And look over there, and look over there, and this and that. It was a lot of things. It was a lot of things. All right. Well, have any of you guys heard of this case before?
I am in a staple in the Black Twitter community.
Thank you for being there.
Staple's the wrong word. I'm in there. I'm nosy. I'm all up in.
We're all up in everybody's business.
Wait a minute. Is it you running the shade room?
No, do not. What? Anyway. No. What? Weird question? No. So So
for those of you who don't know, the Shade Room is like TMZ for black people.
Oh, is that not like just known?
I don't think so. Beth, did you know that?
I didn't. I didn't even know what you're talking about. You're going right over my head.
How do you find out who T.I. is dating or cheating on his wife with?
Yeah. Or how do you know what Cardi B is?
I don't know those people.
Your Cardi B bags.
How did you find out about Amber Rose and her face tattoos? I mean,
Wendy told me.
This is where we get our information. So
I'm guessing you just didn't know Drake had an illegitimate child, since you don't know what Shade Room is.
You didn't know about what's the kid's name? Amadeus? Artemis?
Amadeus.
His name is
That's
Aben.
A great name. Amadeus. I like it.
We're gonna move on. I can't believe you don't know what Shade Room is. But when I was on Twitter, I remember when the story kind of, you know, broke in between, you know, Twitter was a wild time a few years ago. So, you know, somebody was probably, you know, making fun of somebody for having a dirty neck or something. And this story kind of came across the feed, and it was still headlines have always, I know it's become more of a thing now where it's just gotcha journalism and the headlines, the story. But the headline was, you know, woman's boyfriend kills kid for being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a part of that whole, what? Retweet? This isn't cool.
Yeah.
I didn't follow up, but I do remember this story very much just from the Twitter headline of him being gay, quote unquote, and, you know, his mom's boyfriend beating him to death. That was very tragic. But to find out it's way more complex, and that's not even confirmed if he was. He may have just been adjacent to some loving gay folks who raised him, and you know, so it was more complex than I thought from that story I saw the headline for 7 years ago or whatever.
I was not aware of this story, so this was all new for me.
I hadn't heard of it either, but I was sort of looking, because I was thinking, because I had my first kid around this time, and I was wondering when Sandy Hook took place. Sandy Hook took place maybe 6 months before, in December of 2012.
Oh, wow.
And so
crazy.
I think there was,
when that happened, you kind of thought everything was going to change, huh? Nope.
Yeah.
If a bunch of kids can't get it done, it's like, oh, well, we're doomed then. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Nothing's going to change. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hold on to your wombs and your eggs, everybody. Cause things are not getting better. I hadn't heard of it, but I did want to like see where I did Google, like when Sandy Hook happened, because those were a bunch of kids that were killed, and that took over the news cycle for a long time. And this was one poor brown kid who was killed, and it wasn't on my radar. So so what did you find, I guess, the most shocking or surprising about the documentary?
The most shocking, well, as you guys remember from my awesome quote I made, you know, just how deep the rabbit hole really went. Did it again. Finding out just, you know, about the DCFS blunders and how bureaucracy can be affected by human error, just like any other job, of people just deciding to fuck off for the day, and how that could spiral into what happened with Gabriel Fernandez. But just thinking about somebody not doing something, or not filling out those body charts, like going to look at the kid and not keeping track of, you know, oh, he has a scratch on his leg.
Just not filing reports.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I go get my car inspected, they always make sure to let me know, when you got here, that scratch, here's a diagram of your car. There was a scratch here. And to think somebody wouldn't do that is crazy to me, about a person, a child.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Not even as you know, important as looking at a rental car, you know?
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
A human being. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What about you, Beth? What'd you find shocking or surprising?
I was really surprised at how much privatization there was in the system.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So they talked about the company that's running what were they running?
They were getting the data to tell you the signs to look for
Oh, no, not that.
Oh, not that one. No,
Maximus.
Oh, right. The private company.
Yeah, they contract through like welfare and I think it was the child services too. I'm not sure. Do you recall exactly what they were running?
Yeah, so they were these governments get into bed with these private companies, for-profit companies like Maximus, like Lockheed Martin, to help them run their departments for vulnerable populations, which includes DCFS, includes like welfare and government departments of that nature. And
they're for profit and they make shit tons of money, and the CEO the amount of money that he made in 1 year was just disgusting. Mm-hmm. When you think about all not only the people who rely on these services and you know how poor they are, but also the workers, they're probably not making a lot of money either.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, because it's just all disgusting. About the bottom line for these for-profit companies. And so whatever they can do to cut costs, to maximize profits, that's what they're going to do. And at the detriment of the people that they're supposed to be serving. Mm-hmm. Which is super fucked up.
Yeah. So I found that surprising. I had no idea that was going on.
Yeah.
I always find it interesting how much easier when you watch these documentaries about factories and unionization and things like this, how easy it is for these guys at the top it's easy to say, well, we'll just, with the prison industrial complex, just give them peanut butter sandwiches, cut the jelly, we'll save millions. So when it's just paper, when it's just lines on a paper and numbers on a paper, it's so easy to detach yourself from taking away such a small little joy from a bunch of human beings, you know?
Yeah,
it's so easy when you're at that position. We're just dealing with like a million people or 50,000 people, you know?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's all numbers to you.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you. I will never be in that position. And I don't know if people listening would ever be in that position, but you got to think like once the people at the top, like, what is it about money that makes you so afraid to get rid of it when you're supposed to be helping people? That's staggering to me.
I don't understand it.
I don't understand it, and I never will.
I've never
my
been
broke
one
ass
of those.
Never will.
Never been somebody who wanted to like hoard money and treat other people like shit. So
I just don't get it.
It just baffles me.
It doesn't compute. No, because you guys aren't winners, man. You guys aren't super CEO trying to win it all.
I don't drive a BMW.
I think the incentive for a career politician is like, you know, whatever costs I cut, I get a take of.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people don't get into politics. You know, again, another part of this documentary that, you know, kind of, you know, not inspired, but reiterated for me was like how important local politics are, because people like this will get, you know, not to say that the board of supervisors aren't all, some of them might not be good people, but some of them might go, this is a job, you get $80,000 a year, but the perks, man.
Yeah.
Greasing palms, giving people contracts. That's where you get an envelope full of money under your seat, you know, 10th grand, and then you just have to sign off on this contract for the surf shop to be on the beach, you know?
Like, right.
It's a lot of that. For a lot of people, it's a job. That people that get into career, like politics, it's not about helping people. It's just an awesome job. You know, not to go too deep, but it's the same thing with, like, you know, religion and, you know, super churches. Uh-huh. And I'm not saying those people aren't religious, but they are a business. And that's the bottom line is, like,
they sure do like money.
Give me your money.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I this is kind of a tangent, but I was listening. Do you guys listen to Reveal, the podcast?
No,
I don't think so.
It's an investigative journalism podcast, and they talked about recently how they noticed how the president, I call him nine because he's 45. He had the four and the nine. Anyway,
oh, okay.
uh, so.
Doke. as well. All right.
Yes. So Nine has been doing a lot of taking away a lot of regulations. And one significant one is with the EPA. The world will be uninhabitable in 20 years if we keep going the way we're going. But
more. More depressing shit.
So here we go. Awesome. Here we go. Anyway, we're all going to be in the Book of Eli. He's doing all this deregulation, and with the EPA specifically, there's this chemical that they're using on military bases where people live and have kids. And one of the chemicals that they use that's in the water is called TCE, and the EPA put out a report talking about the dangers of this drug, how it causes miscarriages and children to be born with heart defects, and how the government needs to put a regulation on it so they can stop using it. And then the Trump administration was like, nah, we don't like all that, so can we're going to rewrite the report ourselves. No, so this,
yeah, they do that a lot.
But all that to say, they're doing that because it's supporting a lot of these businesses that need to produce this chemical in order to thrive.
Yeah. And it's all about the Benjamins.
All about the Benjamins.
Look at who donated to this campaign. That is the CEO of TCE or whatever. You know, it's that simple sometimes, man. It really is crazy how it can be that simple sometimes.
Yeah, but it's all about money. And what I think is so maddening is that people are dying, like little Gabriel Fernandez. People are dying because systems are in place to make a lot of money for some people, and sort of disregard the rights of everybody else.
Yeah,
the rights and lives of other people. So I thought that this documentary was a really, really good example of that. I was also really surprised by the photographs of the young boy, which I think they made a point to show photographs of him postmortem in each episode, each of the six episodes, and photographs of him throughout the documentary. And at the end, too, of him like as a happy little kid. But you see this happy little kid, this happy little baby turned into literally like mashed potatoes. I mean,
there's a photo of him. He won an award or something. And it could have just been a bad photo, but he looked 40.
He looked,
you know, he just looked.
I mean, he had black eyes. He looked tremendously aged.
Tired.
His face was all messed up.
Yeah. Just the photos throughout the documentary were really, really hard to see. I mean, how somebody could do that to a small child, no matter how bad a kid is, him with cigarettes, to
shoot him with a BB gun.
Diabolical shit, man. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's baffling to me how the parents could like continue to do this over and over again and not feel bad about it. I mean, before they even killed him. They enjoyed it was just baffling, just disgusting.
I think the EM not the EMT but the nurse who treated him in the ER,
that was a really affecting
she celebrates his birthday every year. I just wow, that is incredible. And the first responders who they said in the documentary, first responders normally don't testify in any trials. But they were so affected by this case that they had to. And I think their testimony was really, really impactful on the jury finally coming to their decision to convict and then ultimately sentence. Is it Isaro? Isaro?
Isaro. The first responder said when they first got there, they thought he had some sort of skin disease because he was just head to toe injuries. Head to toe.
What I was gonna say. I was gonna say funny is the wrong word, but it was interesting to hear the first responder saying, "Yeah, so we just picked him up, we're doing our job." And then as we're there, kind of getting everything, we're like, "Whoa, there's like blood here and stuff." Like, because they just thought they were there for he choked or whatever.
He just stopped breathing.
Yeah. And then they start putting the pieces together like, wait, what? Something weird happened here. You know,
I
thought that was interesting to hear. It really put me in the room of being like, okay, so what happened? He choked or something? He fell in the shower or whatever.
That was happened. The mom said
there's
that.
Blood everywhere.
Yeah, there was like several different stories that they told about what happened. Like he fell in the tub. He was jumping on the bed and hit his head on the dresser. He was playing with his brother. They were running around the coffee table, and then he fell and hit his head. Like they just couldn't get their story straight.
Right. Yeah. And one thing that they kind of touched on was that Pearl was sort of mentally unstable and had a history of drug abuse, but they didn't really talk about how that might have played into the events or the abuse. Like, I don't know if the
this was when they started talking. They started talking about that when she was in jail and looking at a trial, and they were saying how she was mentally. What's the word they used?
She had a lot of mental health issues. I think personality disorder, PTSD depression. From being gang raped. Yeah, the depression.
And all of that can be absolutely true, and you'd be a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I understand that's the defense's job. That's the defense's
to
job.
To bring up these things. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's certainly and as Beth says often on our show, an explanation, but not an excuse.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mentally challenged. They said she had the mental capacity of a second grader or something. And I don't know.
I think
if
second
graders
are very compassionate people. And the note that she wrote when she got her plea at the end, and she's like, I just wanted to say, like, my bad.
Sorry.
Wasn't cool. Shouldn't have did that.
Yeah.
My kids, I hope you guys will come. She goes, my kids, I hope you guys will come to your. She like had to correct herself because she realized
she
sounded like a dick.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You guys will come to your sense. Come to me. Come to me. I was like, no.
Yeah.
How would they do that?
Thank you.
Right.
How about no?
Yeah. And I really feel for those two surviving kids because. I don't know if anybody's tried to talk to them since this documentary came out. They're still minors, so I don't know if you can, but like what their lives are going to be like from the
going
time
forward,
Gabriel's
yeah.
death
yeah.
to going forward. Like,
well, hopefully, I hope they got some counseling.
I hope so too.
Based on where they're from and.
Probably not.
Just that's going to be repressed. I hope this new generation, these kids today are amazing. They're like super sexually fluid and know how to explain their thoughts and things like that and open to therapy. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they're on Twitter.
Maybe.
They're like, I'm going to get talk space.
Well,
at some point, I hope they get some counseling. If not now, then later. At some point, I hope they do.
I mean, the sister was so sad, man. Yeah, sister when she's saying, "I felt bad because I wouldn't let him play with just stuff that you do as an older sibling, like get out of here."
Right, that's not.
Die. Oh shit, I shouldn't have said that.
But I can totally empathize with her. Like there are things that I regret doing when I was a kid, but I can't even imagine the. Her brother died. You know, there's things I did as a kid that I feel bad about, but nobody died. How awful that would feel. Like she was saying, it made me really sad when she was saying he's alone in the dark all the time, and she wouldn't let him be with him. That made me
in a box. So let's talk about this box. So they would handcuff Gabriel's hands. To the handles on the outside
inside of the box.
His hands would be inside, but the handcuffs were anchored to the outside handles. And then they would put a bandana over his mouth. And sometimes they would put a sock in his mouth to keep him from talking. And he would have to go to the bathroom inside this box. And he had to clean it. So
and eat cat litter.
And these people
should never see the light of day.
Cat litter. Yeah.
Hearing the daughter say, hearing the sister tell the detective that, They need all the therapy to even have seen that, to have seen a parent make your brother.
And there was one part when they talked about the stress that he must have been under, and in the autopsy,
how that was evident that in that gland.
Yeah, the thymus gland, and how it was like shrunken, like. And normally in a child that age, it's like full and plump, and it was just like shriveled.
Yeah.
Because of how much stress he was under.
Yeah. And you got to remember, he was only with them for 8 months.
Yeah.
That's insane.
He was 8 years old, and in 8 months that gland underwent that he was under such severe stress, and crying out for help at every turn he could. Yeah.
And you know what? It crossed my mind as I was watching the documentary, all the trauma that he suffered, like the cigarette burns and stuff. That's painful, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There had to have been some screaming. Did the neighbors not ever hear it? What?
There's so many more people culpable to this whole thing than, you know, like everybody just turned a blind eye. And I understand, you know, it's like, you know, you might come up in a neighborhood. I know I can speak for myself. It's like, you know, that's not your business. Your neighbors, you know, calling the police. We don't call the police here. Like, that's their business.
If you hear a kid screaming, though, like, that he had to have been screaming.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would absolutely call the police.
I
got some cousins. Cameron famously said, if a serial killer lived next door to him, I would move. And it was like, you wouldn't call the police? No, I would move. I'll leave. You know? Yeah. So,
I've lived in apartments before where there were noisy neighbors where, you know, there's lots of stomping around and throwing things and yelling, but if I'd heard screaming, I'd be calling the police.
And Beth is, all due respect, she's a white lady, the top of my favorite white lady list.
I'm gonna call your manager.
She always
are they stomping the up there?
But I can remember when we were kids and we were screaming after an ass whooping or something, and my parents would say, you guys need to shut the hell up, otherwise somebody's going to call the police. And you know who's going to go to jail? Your black ass. And me and my brothers would like look at each other like, which black ass are they talking about?
It could be that they
don't want to go to jail or get the police involved. I can understand.
There was the incident where the police came to check on him, and instead of actually doing their jobs, they offered to come the next day and scare little Gabriel, scare the shit out of him.
Yeah, because for some reason Pearl is the most believable person in all of Palmdale.
Palmdale, come back.
She was pretty good on the phone. I have to say, when they played her phone calls, she sounded pretty good. Like,
cool, like, collected.
Like she sounded like, I don't know what to say
with it. But she had been through the system so many times. She knew what to say.
She did a good job. Mm-hmm. But for those police to come and not like actually look at the kid or anything. And then the neighbor said that when they took him out to the police car and put him in the police car and scared the shit out of him, he had bruises on him.
Nobody paid attention to this kid, man. I think that you know, it's really sad, and I'd like to talk about the homophobia in black and brown communities.
Let's go there. Talk about it.
That just kind of just permeated that whole house, and it's clear that the abuse that was directed towards Gabriel was because of their mind that they had already made up, because he grew up around his gay uncle and his spouse or whatever thing that they've concocted in their mind. They could just beat the gay out of him, or torture him for being gay, or that being gay was worthy of this anger that they had, and they needed to take it out on him or whatever. And I just, the notion of doing that to a kid, like looking at a kid and bullying a kid as an adult, it just blows
not
my
even
mind.
Bullying, just
terrorizing and torturing
him. Terrorizing him. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, Alvin. There, that is an element within Black and Brown communities, the homophobia, and I can just think back into, and I think it's generational, to be honest with you. I think maybe so Black people and Brown people go to church, right? They go to Catholic church, or they go to a Christian church or a Baptist church or whatever. And they say in the Bible that being gay is a sin and you're going to go to hell and all these things. And I think older generations just take that and don't seek any understanding of what the Bible really says and what it really means to be gay. And my dad's a pastor. Hello. Anyway,
there's that video of that lady in like the Iowa caucus talking to one of those Pete Buttigieg spokespeople, and she's like, "Wait, he's gay? Like, where, first of all, what rock do you live under?" He's like, she already cast her vote, and she's like, "I want to take my vote back. I didn't know he was gay."
Oh my
and
God.
The lady gives her this passionate, like, intelligent, "Well, you know, the Bible, you know, people should be treated how they." Well, I mean, he's gay though. And she's like, yes.
Well, everybody should be treated equally, except for gay people.
well, I don't know. Well, then you aren't a Christian, is what she said to her.
She goes, yeah.
Okay, well, and she just gave up. I've never seen somebody just give up. Like, well, okay, well, she couldn't believe it. She goes, well, I'll try to get your vote back. Have a nice day. She's like, I'm just saying he's gay.
Yeah.
just couldn't be swayed. There was no logic.
She couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
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 A lot of people.
There is a lot of people like that, but I do think it's generational. Like, I think millennials, the Gen Zers, and kids younger are like, so what? Like, next, and like, what kind of person are you? That's what we really care about.
It's awesome. It's a great time to just express yourself creatively. Not even anything to do with sexuality, and nobody's judging you, you know. And anybody that is judging you, they look weird. I think that's cool. It's like, you, why do you care?
Yeah. Yeah, so I do think that there's a lot to unpack there with homophobia in Black and Brown communities, but it is a thing. So I'm glad you brought that up.
What else should we talk about?
We could talk about that juror.
Oh, yeah, that one juror who just wasn't convinced that this was intentional.
He's like, this is second degree, guys. Let's look at the facts here.
Yeah, and... I gotta say,
man, we're mad, man. Just say yeah. That's what they wanted to say. They were like, just say yeah, man. Shut up.
And I assumed that this gentleman was an immigrant, and he probably took his American citizenship and civic duty very, very seriously.
Guys, there's rules here.
Yeah.
You have to follow. There was like,
he was very logical. Yeah. And I could kind of follow his logic where he was saying, you know, it wasn't premeditated, but he wasn't really understanding that it still could be premeditated, even if he made the decision like 1 second before he started beating on the kid. That's still premeditated. And I think he had a real hard time with that.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
I think, what did he say? Well, he didn't kill him and then put him in the forest or hide
him. Right. Like, that's what he was thinking, premeditation. You had to, like, plan it out, his plan. And then, you know, if you had a plan, then you would, like, hide the body. Like, that just makes sense. But it does. That's not premeditation. I mean, well, it is premeditation. But premeditation can also be, like, 1 second before you start beating on this kid, you're like, I'm gonna fucking kill this kid.
Yeah.
And that's premeditation. And he just couldn't get it.
No. Right. And they also, I mean, maybe I don't know what they said to convince him, but if that was his angle.
Shut up. They just both, I was like, man, if you don't, there's a lot of fist wagging, like, man, just say yes, man.
So we can go. I'm assuming that he finally went over to their side of thinking Yeah, well, they finally convinced him, or he gave up, one or the other.
Yeah, well, and Pearl and Isao didn't hide the body, but they certainly tried to hide the facts.
Yeah,
and so maybe that's what ended up convincing the
they premeditated a story before they called the police.
Right, exactly. So maybe.
And I actually wonder how long that they waited before they did call the police.
Me too. The kids who testified, or maybe it was in their police video when they were being interviewed by the police, but they explained that they tried to wake him up by putting him in the
shower. But then they had time also to clean up the blood.
Right.
So, I mean, it was a little bit before they called the police, I think.
Right. Yeah. We'll never know, I guess, how much time that was.
How much time passed. Yeah.
Also talk about for the next 45 minutes, Pearl's court makeup.
Yeah. Let's do it.
She went big, man.
She did.
Big cheeks, big eyebrows.
Yeah. She was trying to do some contouring and it just wasn't
good. I liked when they cut to her and like she's like, "You guys are throwing my makeup everywhere." It's like, "I paid for that." It's like, you're in jail for killing your child. What are you talking about, girl?
You need to like stop.
Get your priorities together.
Simmer down,
Pearl. Don't Fernandez me.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. How like erratic she was in the prison video, and I can only imagine how erratic she was like at home with her kids. If these are like grown ass adults trying to subdue you, can you imagine how fucked up she was to Gabriel?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to, but
yeah. And her makeup, not only in the courtroom, but in those photos of her at the party, like, so we talked about how it was like Chola style, and I grew up in Northern California, and I met my husband and went to college in Southern California, and it involves
I've seen it
these
done
women, yeah, these Latinx women basically shaving off their eyebrows and drawing them on, so they always look quite surprised.
Yeah.
And then and I used to do this too. Line your lips, because it was on all the music videos. Line your lips in dark or dark brown or black lip liner, and then color it in with brown or lip gloss. And that was the aesthetic in the mid-90s, early 90s.
So is that
but
from music videos? Is that where they get that idea from? Because I think it's
I think it's backwards. I think the music videos took it from the streets.
When
Gwen
Stefani.
Yeah, she does it too.
Yeah. She had that phase where she was a Chola Japanese person.
Oh yeah. Hirojuku girls. Which, by the way, this is fucked up. This drives me nuts, because those Hirojuku girls were Asian women who were perfectly capable of speaking up for themselves and speaking English. But when they would go on events with Gwen Stefani, she wouldn't let them speak English. They had to speak Japanese, and it's very fucked up. Like, talk about modern slavery. But anyway, I digress.
If I had a job where I spoke like this, and then the guy was like, "No, but like you're African," and I had to be like, "Hello." I was like, "Why?" I quit the job.
Yeah, but
can you gotta get the job. More black,
you gotta
please?
Get the bag, right? Yeah.
Really, really urban it up. Like, really sold in there. Like fucking Justin Timberlake telling me that. Oh man, you're down, Justin.
He's problematic. But
I love Justin Timberlake. But
I do.
He loves black culture. But
he sure does. And I mean, that's the thing is, love black and brown culture, but not loving black and brown people is a problem. So.
But back to Pearl. Just to put a cap on things, I thought she looked like Trixie Mattei. She was a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race, and half of her face, like she contours half of her face. So the bottom half is, you know, regular skin tone color, and then the top half is just white, like white like half of her face is a different color. So I
In some of those photographs of Pearl, it looked like somebody took a big powder puff and slapped her in the face.
To hear dudes be like people talk about when Issa Rae met her, and he's like, he just thought she was the most beautiful thing in the world. And I was like, really?
He could never get another woman as beautiful as her.
He was never going to do. He's like, is it?
Okay.
All right. Cool. Do your thing, man. All right. Cool.
Oh boy. Yeah.
That's interesting. I like that take.
People ever. Love at first sight, and they became the most awful people ever I've ever seen in my life.
Well. Who?
The two of them. It was a sweet love story, and then they just became the two most awful people in history.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
Faded out for a minute.
Oh, my bad.
I'm like, who's the most awful people? Oh, yeah. The guys we're talking about. Yeah, they are.
So I guess let's talk about the systematic fuckery that failed Gabriel Fernandez, the DCFS, the sheriffs, the teachers. Who else? The security guard who tried but didn't get anywhere.
It's like everybody just always went, that kid's bruised.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell somebody.
Shout out to the security guard, because he really didn't have to do anything, and he tried.
Yeah, he tried. He really did try.
Very true.
Yeah.
See something, say something. And he did.
Right.
He followed that age-old rule.
But there just wasn't enough... like follow up, it didn't get into the right people's hands, but there were so many chances for it to get to the right people's hands. A doctor, a dentist. Do you all remember the bat that
Pearl what did it say
so
on the bat?
It said something like I can't remember the Spanish words, but it's something like and you deserve it. You deserve it from, that'll show you while you're in the grave, or that'll show you.
Keeps getting worse when you say, geez.
Yeah, you keep going. I'm like, oh, shit.
Like that. Yeah. And not positive.
Yeah.
Fucking
just butted him in the mouth with a bat.
Yeah.
Knocked
out his teeth. Yeah.
And by the way, I only know this because I have a kid who's losing a ton of teeth. Kids start to lose their teeth at age 7 or 8. And so I was thinking like, oh no, did they knock out his adult teeth?
His adult teeth, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like they could have been his adult teeth.
Yeah. So, and never took him to the dentist or the doctor.
Yeah.
And another thing that was
Guys, I mean, you're not thinking like them. He's gay.
Oh, right.
So gay people don't go to the dentist. It's
Nor deserve
whatever weird thing they made up.
Weird
rule they made up about gay people and teeth or something, you know?
Yeah. Right. So let's. We didn't talk about the uncles. Where they get this idea that he's gay. So
Daniel was the uncle.
David and Michael. Pearl didn't want Gabriel. And so she agreed.
Abandon him in the hospital.
Yeah. So she agreed that Michael and David, Michael was his biological uncle. He was gay, and his boyfriend, David, took custody of Gabriel. And I don't really understand how they had him for like 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I don't understand how Gabriel was taken from them.
Well, they spread a rumor that he was a pedophile.
He was molesting. Yeah, which actually probably happens a lot. Well, a lot's maybe not the word I'm looking for, but one of the reasons
with gay couples who have adopted kids.
Yeah,
right. One of the reasons that people get upset with the fact that gay people can adopt kids is they think that they're gonna molest them, like their sexual orientation is gonna cause them to molest kids, and that's stupid and wrong.
It is stupid and wrong. Also, I think people conflate pedophilia with homosexuality.
Yeah,
and they are not the same thing
because they're stupid.
Yeah,
it's an insane thing to think that.
Yeah,
especially when you see a case like this where that kid was absolutely better off where he was. With his uncle and his spouse. Yeah. But also, I think it brought up the question to me where it's like, if we lived in a world where abortion wasn't so stigmatized. And now, again, this kid ended up dead and that's tragic. But to live the life that he lived, it's like, if you didn't want your kid, maybe you should have just not had the kid, you know?
Right. Well, I think that she did not want to have the kid. She wanted to abort it, which is really strange to me. I never understood why she didn't want this pregnancy, because the kid had the same dad as the other two kids. And when he was born...
Well, she might not have just... She's like, two kids, that's enough, you know? Yeah, she might have just been like, I don't want another kid.
Yeah. Okay. But then he's born and being taken care of by family members, and then she decides to take custody of him essentially just to get extra welfare money, which is just
a terrible plan.
But I still didn't understand why he was the family scapegoat, why she didn't want him in the first place. Like, what happened? What were the circumstances to make her so hateful and abusive towards him.
As he got older, it was the gay thing. As he got older, it was the gay thing. I think it was solely that.
Well, yeah. I think also somebody else that I was talking to suggested that it might have been because he spent so much time away from her. Mm. The other kids, she had custody of them. She didn't have as strong of a bond with him as she did with the other kids, and then the whole they thought he was gay thing. And from what I understand, he was just a softer, sweeter kid, and they thought he wasn't macho enough, I guess. I don't know. And so he became the family scapegoat, and they talked about it a little bit in the documentary, how the scapegoat syndrome this happens sometimes, and I don't really understand it. I don't understand any of this. So, but it happens sometimes where one of the kids becomes the scapegoat, and they take everything out on that kid, and that's what happened in this case.
Yeah, I think you're right. Where do you guys want to go next?
I would like to talk about that old lady who lied said Gabe, he didn't do good in school. He was bad in school. The kid was getting awards left, right, and center, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't just make up stuff, lady.
Straight A's. This woman was bad. She was
Pat Clement.
The old nun.
The social worker.
Yeah,
she was a bitch. I hated her. I hated her.
No, she was awful all throughout, I don't know if they.
She was a lazy worker. She didn't do her job, and she had gotten written up several times for that, and they just kept covering her ass. And so I think part of it is the system, you know, to keep her on after she's not proven that she's not doing her job, and then when she did do her job, she did a shitty job, and then she falsified records. So as far as the four social workers that got charged with a crime, she's the only one that I thought really kind of deserved it.
I thought Stephanie Martinez.
Ramirez.
Yeah. Okay. She just was new, and they put her on a bad case, as they showed when they had a lady go in and show you how it's supposed to be done. I liked her. Right. She's only there briefly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She didn't make a fuss. She wasn't judgmental. She's like, I'm just here to do my job. I'm not accusing you of anything.
Yeah.
And it really showed you, like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do. Absolutely. And clearly nobody did that.
Right.
They couldn't have. They couldn't have. They couldn't have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Stephanie...
overwhelmed. She swamped.
She didn't know what she was doing. And she didn't get enough training, probably.
No, not at all.
And I'm sure this seems like a kind of environment where there's some kind of weird in-house seniority. So they're like, yeah, Pat, we can't fire Pat. She's been bad at this job for like 15 years.
We got to let her retire.
Yeah.
She's got to get her pension, guys. Come on. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not really tenure, but it is tenure. Like, we just can't fire this person. It's yeah. it's not in the cards.
She's one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bureaucracy. I can't talk. Bureaucracy in this case. Just how the system did everything it could to try to protect itself. Do you remember that black guy who was interviewed who was talking about how they turned an office space into a child detention center, essentially? Yeah. And he was concerned. He wanted to do his job, and he reported this issue to his superiors, and they were like, "Shut the fuck up, or get fired."
Yeah, man. Threatened
to fire him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this really gross system trying to protect the system when the system isn't working is rampant, and it is really to the detriment of children in this case, like Gabriel Fernandez. So. Yeah,
well, it's crazy how no matter what the stakes are, it's interesting to see how a job can just become a job, even if your job is protecting kids. It's like, okay, well, what about my job? I need to keep my job and my pension and my checks coming in. Never mind that some kid died. Like, whatever. I didn't feel like going to work that day. Sometimes that happens.
I had a
dentist appointment.
I have to go out to meet with these parents. I don't really feel like doing it. So. Yeah. Just going to do it half-assed or whatever.
Yeah, flub some paperwork and say
that passion could just go away. Where it's like, you're even like for teachers, for these really important jobs, you can be a teacher who's like, oh, I'm phoning it in today. Even if you started the job as like, I'm going to change minds. And some days it's work. Some days I'm just at work today.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that a kid died when you were doing that for 8 months or whatever, you know?
Right. And you can get jaded. I think that this is absolutely a profession where that could happen.
Absolutely.
Where you go in with the best of intentions and just the system, the workload, the cases that you're encountering are so just the worst of the worst that you are just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, so. I respect people who go into that profession because I know I could not do it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Although I did Google how to become a social worker after I saw this, because I was like, I'm gonna do something about this. I'm gonna fix this. And then I was like, oh, I don't have the qualifications. But that's
I'm gonna move to Palmdale, and I'm gonna make a difference.
First, I'm gonna call up Afro Man. I'm telling you, I hope you guys go and listen after this. It's so fun.
Come to the convention center on May 3rd. You gotta be there. You buy tickets for me.
If it's fun music, maybe I will, because I think I need a palate cleanser after this.
Something to cheer us up. Yeah.
I had to watch Coco after this.
Oh.
just shaking and just like, oh, there's things can be colorful and happy and not. I can take this hoodie off.
One brown boy who made it. Coco.
Yes. Oh, I didn't even make the connection there. Oh, God. Oh, he should have been Coco.
Yes.
Life cut short. Man. He could have just been. Only. He seemed like such a bright little fun kid, man.
He said like happy when he was living with his uncle and the boyfriend. Like, just he looked like he was just a really cute, happy kid. You know, it's
when
really
he made
sad.
It Mother's Day thing. I was like, oh
that's what I wanted to get into. The mother thing. Still loved his mom in spite of all the awful things she did to him. And I was listening to a podcast. It's called, I can't think of what it's called, but it was about talking to kids about like addiction and separating kids. Kids are really good at separating the bad things that they do with the parents that they love. And even if a parent goes to jail, dies, overdoses, abuses them, a kid will still stand and love hard for their parent. So when if you were to talk to a kid like Gabriel, it was clear he loved his mom. He just didn't like all the other shit that she did, and nobody was able to intervene and help with those issues.
And the prosecutor, Jonathan Hatami, he talked about that too, about how he was abused when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. And he talked about his father and like the kind of relationship he had with his father being abused. And he said, I love him, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it reminded me, when you just now talking about that, when they interviewed Isaro and he's saying, yeah, man, I'd leave the room and he'd be trying to tell his mom, like, he treats you bad, you can do better. He's trying to be his mom's, like, you know, bestie and give her a pep talk. And he comes back in, like, why are you hating on me?
Yeah.
Like it's a weird energy to throw towards a child. Like, you talking shit about me behind my back, bro?
Yeah, like he's an adult.
Seven. Yeah. He's 7, man. What are you doing?
He's fucking 7 years old trying to look out after his mom. Yeah.
You want to talk about me? You want to talk about me? Say when I'm in the room, bro. Don't be a bitch now. Yes. Don't be a bitch, bro. It's like, what are you talking about, man? Why are you?
Yeah.
He's like, I was at a 20. I was at a 20 out of 10.
Fucked up.
Yeah, he did say that. I was at a 20 when I beat this child to death. And for that reason, you should give me second degree murder and only give me life in prison. I kind of felt bad for the defense attorneys. I don't know if they're public defenders or not, but man, what a hard case to take. And I mean, the whole time I would have been trying to convince my client to just take the plea.
I don't really know why he didn't take the plea. Yeah, he should have. Taking the plea deal because now
what's the best outcome for you here, man?
Yeah, right. Yeah, what do you think you're gonna, you know, get if you go to trial? You're gonna get something the same or worse than if you take the plea deal. So take the fucking plea deal, you moron.
He was not a very smart man, and I gotta think that's why his ego was so offended by a child. He just was really insecure.
So you talking shit about me?
Yeah,
I'm a transporter at a nursing home. What do you?
Who the hell are you?
What you got an A in school? You know, what, you have friends? Just ridiculous.
Oh, you think first grade is just so all that?
Yeah.
Have you ever changed an elderly woman's diaper? Get over yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm eight, man.
I'm 8, sir. Relax. And if only he had, right? But anyway, now
that, I thought that was a good point that somebody brought up where it says it wasn't none of them were his kids. He wasn't married to Pearl. You could just leave.
Yeah.
You could leave. You had no anchorage to that. There's nothing keeping you there. Just go. He really thought he couldn't find anything better than Pearl in her contour.
Right. Big puff off your face.
That's good to get, man.
That is a good point. Yeah. That contour was
terrible.
Mother's milk, I guess.
I wanted to say that I really like the prosecutor, Jonathan Hatami.
Yeah. Like him.
One of the parts that really affected me was at the end after Isaro's trial when he got the death penalty and he went over to the biological father of Gabriel and hugged him and cried. And I teared up when that happened.
Yeah, that was a really, really beautiful moment. And he was the right man for the job. And I don't have nice things to say normally about prosecutors because they lock up a lot of black and brown people, some of them for no reason. But anyway, he was
a good guy. Yeah.
He's one of the good ones. So
it's good to see when somebody's actually they're for the cause and they're invested in it. Because sometimes you're saying you're just quoting the statutes from article this and this precedent, and you just know how to win the case.
Yeah,
but he really cared about getting justice, whatever justice you get. Also,
and he also had a lot of empathy for the biological father of Gabriel.
Absolutely.
That buddy cop movie. That's what an unlikely duo. You know, that'd be sweet to see them hanging out. Viceland TV show about
the next on the next episode of Turner and Hooch. Do you guys have any criticisms? Anything about the storytelling or the series or the characters involved? Anywhere that you think they might have fallen short?
I thought, and please step in if you guys feel like I'm wrong. I definitely think the teacher cared, right?
And
I'm sure she has her own guilt that she has to deal with for the rest of her life, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. But she really had this righteousness to her in the documentary where I was like, you could have called the cops. I mean, like, if you bring a police officer to the school,
and maybe
you call the police and go, hey, I don't know what else to do, but this kid is telling me they shot him in the face with a BB gun. A police officer will do a proper welfare check. Unless they fall under her spell. Didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got the whole Palmdale in her pocket, apparently.
Yeah.
But it felt like there was so many instances of like, and then after time 10, when he told me they punched him in the face, I was like, I'm going to call this number again. And then when he told me, don't call the number again, because they don't do anything. And, you know,
she was kind of put in between a rock and a hard place then, you know, like you keep calling this lady and every time she comes out, they just treat me worse. Like you could see she was conflicted, like, and she did call because she's a mandated reporter. So she had to, but, you could see she was conflicted. She didn't know what to do to help this kid.
Yeah. But I got to think maybe if she couldn't go to the principal because she said the principal didn't help her anymore. The
principal fucked off real quick.
The principal was like, don't even get into it.
She could have asked maybe a more experienced teacher, like, what would you do? Can you back me up? Can you help support me? Or I call the police from my car or, you know, not from the school, like just call the police from home.
A thought that I had with the when Pearl took the kids to the welfare office and the security guard saw Gabriel and called the police, and the other lady didn't want to because she was told by her superior that she couldn't because she'd have to put in overtime. I didn't know why she you missed that part. Yeah. Yeah, she talked to her superior.
It's not the budget.
Month. Said we're going to close in 15 minutes. So if you do that, you're going to have to put in overtime. So no, you don't do that. And but she could have, after she left work, she could have called the police. But she didn't. She put on the security guard to do it.
I'm gonna put an asterisk on my criticism because it's easy to be like an armchair quarterback and
I've never
had a kid come to me and it's like,
hindsight is 2020. And I'm sure the teacher didn't think that he was gonna get murdered. You're trying to help this kid because he's getting hurt, but she probably didn't know he was going to get murdered.
That's the all-encompassing thing about this whole thing is nobody ever thought death was on the table. Yeah. And I think that's why everybody was so comfortable treating the job like it's just, you know, like you work at Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. It's like, yeah, man, sometimes, you know, on Thursdays I'll take a late lunch and I don't even go to any of my appointments.
Uh-huh. Right.
I think they didn't think about death. Death wasn't a thing that they thought.
Yeah.
Right, was possible.
Was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, you never. How could you have foreseen that? I guess from their vantage point, but from our vantage point, watching the documentary, we're like, we all know what's coming.
Yeah, because we know the end of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just listening to a podcast. They were talking about how everybody, when you watch shows like Forensic Files or I don't know, that where it's a mystery who kills somebody, but there's hints all along the way, and you're like, oh, it was so and so, but then they'll show them the same story, and they don't have the hints, and all they have is the facts, and they can't figure it out.
They have these games where they'll send you like a murder mystery box.
Right.
And I've done one time. I'm like, oh, I'm dumb as shit. But I'll do a, every week I do a story where I'm like, you couldn't tell that those footprints weren't the footprints of this guy because I know who did it. And like, I don't. You know, it's a hard thing to criticize, man. You know, it's when the clues are right there in front of you, you can figure them out. But when you got to find them, it's a whole different thing. Tracking down leads and all. It's a hard thing to do. But this feels so egregious and grossly negligent that even as somebody who isn't in the field, I'm like, he had his whole forehead skin was rubbed off and nobody said, it's like, what's the deal?
To that hub to get checked out. And it was, I don't remember which episode it was. It was like the second or third episode or maybe in the first. I don't know.
I'm getting tired. The trauma is just all blurred together.
one of those episodes where they were saying, you know, this kid on the first instance should have been brought into that hub to be looked at by the doctor. And if that had happened, none of this other stuff would have happened. So, yeah. I mean, it was a breakdown from the very beginning.
Yeah. Sure. So any final thoughts or takeaways? Have we covered it all?
Yeah, it was a really complex story. And I don't think you can get everything out of it that you could unless you watch it a few times.
And I won't be doing that.
Yeah.
Two is enough for me. Twice is enough for me.
So if my only criticism is it was like a super complex story. They touched on so many different aspects. And I mean, it's good, but I think it was really only the surface.
Yeah.
Really.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
They left you with a lot of questions that they didn't answer.
Yeah. Not so many answers, which is probably what they intended.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be a second series. I don't know.
Or more morbidly, they just don't have the answers and they won't figure out how to fix this problem.
Right.
You know,
yeah. I don't think anyone knows how to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Nobody knows. They've made attempts, but it still happened.
The robot system that the lady proposed, which is robots will fix it for us.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm going to try to find that lady from Terminator 2 and make friends with her so she can pretend.
All right. That's the plan. We got it.
Yeah.
Keep us in the loop. Okay.
Okay. I'll let you know how it goes. If it's not too long or too much trouble, I was thinking maybe we could end the show with something that's making us happy or a shout out this week that something that's on your radar that helped cure your depression after watching this show.
Oh, sure. I can go.
Okay.
Go ahead. Shout out to Cheer, the show Cheer on Netflix.
Yes.
Jeremiah is. If that guy can't make your day brighter, your day, you need to go some and talk to some professionals because that kid is a breath of fresh air.
Yes,
I love just the story of Cheer and him not, you know, he's kind of an overweight guy, but he works hard and he finally gets on Matt.
Yes.
And they go to the finals and, you know.
And so they win Daytona. Yes.
Oh, my God. You know, so just seeing his story arc of, you know, you know, I'm not really the best guy, but I work harder than everybody. I know all the things. And if you just work hard and believe, good things happen. So that was a way to cleanse my palate, along with I went out in the backyard. I blew some dandies off some dandelions. I just had to do whatever I needed to do to come out of the funk. It leaves you in a funk.
Yes, it does.
So that's my bright spot is Cheer.
It sticks around.
Yeah. So I don't really have a shout out, but what I've been doing is watching old Community episodes. It's on Hulu. So, you know, if you have Hulu, you can go back and watch those because that's what's been cheering me up after watching.
There you go. I'm gonna shout out a song that's make me happy. It's called Made It Weird. And it's by this.
Is that by Afro Man?
No. This is. I should shout that out. Jackknife Lee is the artist, and it just is about him like always making things weird and worrying about the things he fucked up, and he's like, "Well, I made it weird." But he's one of those there's like a new generation of black person I think that is like allowed to be nerdy.
Oh, I love it.
I would put you and me in that camp, Alvin.
It's such a breath of fresh air.
It is. It is. And I guess maybe most people know of like Childish Gambino.
Yeah, Donald Glover, Community.
Yeah.
He kind of brought the wave in. He brought the wave in. Made it mainstream.
Made it okay. And so now there's a bunch of new artists who are sort of, you know, taking the mantle and getting to be weird and silly and awesome. Rap about it. And so this song is called Made It Weird, and I love it to death.
Okay,
so.
Cool.
Yeah. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
Like, wait, black people can listen to Father John Misty? It's like,
yes. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
And whatever you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been a pleasure. Affirmative pleasure. Yeah, thanks so much for agreeing to do this with us. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. But in the meantime, Affirmative Murder, where can the people find you?
We are on just about every social media except Bumble. If you type in Affirmative, we'll pop up. I mean, it's been, you know, thankfully there aren't many podcasts, except there's this one podcast, the Affirmation Podcast. It's this Christian lady just talking weird stuff. But if you type in the whole word affirmative will come up immediately. There's no competition in the affirmative field of podcasts. So you type in affirmative on Twitter, Instagram. We have a Facebook group, Affirmative Murder, and we're all over the place. Come on by, have some conversations, share some memes. We're having a blast.
Yes. Okay. Yes, please do. By the way, I do listen to that affirmation podcast.
Oh, I'm glad she's giving you affirmations.
I'm trying to live my best 2020. So, the people can find Fruit Loops Pod at our website. We're at fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod. Our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We're also on Twitter, on Instagram, at Fruit Loops Pod, across all social media. This has been great. So I guess that's it for our mashup. Thanks for listening.
Get out and vote. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Core fumble the part in one song, and I keep replaying the part that went wrong. Bunch of folks after it said it went good, but I couldn't help letting them know where I stood. Killing all the audience buzz from that night, cause I couldn't help saying it wasn't that type. Caught in between the realms of what's real, people's perceptions versus what I feel. Most of the time.